I know it was a surprise having him surprise him, but we're going to be paying him more money, so I'm not worried about it. I do like to have a hymn after the announcements, especially if they go long, so people can stretch and stand. And of course, they're part of the worship service when we do sing. In my opinion, being a mother is not that hard. Being a good mother is a challenge. Okay. There was a newly planned reality TV show called Outdoor Survival, and somebody decided to do a takeoff on it and change the parameters. And so the way it was going to be introduced was, instead of just a number of, say, young adults dropped off on an island, in this case, in this reality TV show called Outdoor Survival, six men are dropped off on an island, each with four kids in a van. For the next 6 weeks, he is to keep the kids clothed and fed and mentally stimulated. There is no access to fast food. He is to correct all homework, do all laundry, do all the house cleaning in their assigned hut, help complete all science projects, cook all meals, provide school lunches, enable each kid to play two sports and take each one to either music, dance, or karate lessons, and handle sibling squabbles. Each man will be judged on how well he can juggle these things and shave his legs and wear makeup on a regular basis. He will be judged on how well he can take an Indian hut model with six toothpicks and crepe paper and a tortilla and a magic marker and put it all together. And the winner gets voted off the island so that he can have his job back. Whoa. After 2 weeks of being Mr. Mom, one man confessed, "Oh, I ironed three shirts before I realized that the iron wasn't plugged in. I left so much toothpaste building up in the kids' bathroom, I could have had it pried off with a large crowbar. I left clothes uncleaned. I didn't even know that they were, buried in the closet. I burned three pots, and on one shopping trip, accidentally left one kid back at the grocery store." No, motherhood is not in a job. It's an adventure. You see, there's mother. What is it? Yes, they're strong, and then there's mother strong. All right. Okay. You're with me on this. That proves that we need mothers. The family functions better with mothers. But is there any real reward for motherhood? Yes, of course there is. And we need to analyze that. We need to appreciate motherhood. Mother's Day is tomorrow. I'm not one to like to do something just because it's traditional. I mean, tradition can be nice, but maybe we need a sermon on Mother's Day a month from now, in addition to one now, or five times, or maybe not again for the next 10 years. You do it when you need to. But with society under, families under attack, fatherhood under attack, and motherhood under attack, you know, we need to value, we need to consider what is so significant about motherhood. Do we really appreciate it, honor it, cherish it, love it, esteem it highly? As a congregation, men and women alike need to do that. We need to do that for fatherhood. That's another subject. But motherhood, how valuable is that? And are our mothers encouraged, not just tomorrow, but all the time? It pays back rich dividends. It is so crucial. You can't say enough about a subject like this. And so I'd like to take the time to value it, to encourage us to celebrate it, teach it, and enable others to have it. And we need to be very aware of the rewards. Happy families, a stronger church, a stronger future, stronger future families, great examples for the future. Men can do many things, but men are often inadequate when trying to fill in for their wives. Family circumstances demand that mothers mentally handle multiple challenges simultaneously, and they are not appreciated. Our society belittles fatherhood, it belittles motherhood. Even Hillary Clinton was interviewed one time, and somebody asked her a question on motherhood. She just got very upset and said, "Well, what do you expect me to do, make teas and make cookies?" As if that's all there was to it. It was relegated. Wow, we're doing important things. Well, maybe they're important, but was it Napoleon that said, you know, the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world? You know, if we don't have a strong foundation of a family, all the other stuff doesn't matter, because we as a society will not be around. It makes a world of difference what happens in the home, a world of difference if women can be the mothers that God would want them to be. It doesn't mean that they can't work outside the home, but as a base of operation, that they are tuned into their families and have the latitude and the freedom to be able to do that. There are many different pressures in this world. We all understand that, economically as well. We understand those pressures. But women are gifted at having the capacity to be mothers. They can think of multiple things at the same time. A wife can be cooking and a toddler's crying and she picks up the toddler and she's still stirring the gravy, and then the phone rings and she gets the phone. She's got that, and she can do these things. I would go nuts. I would implode mentally. If I were in that kitchen stirring the gravy and the child came wanting something, I'd say, "Not now. You wait. You can have your crisis in 5 minutes. I've got to get this done. I've got to cook this meal." And anyway, it's a challenge for men. Men don't think but of one thing at a time. Dwight Eisenhower said it best, "You got to do one thing at a time to do it right." But a lot of reality is that multiple things are happening all the time. They've done studies, scientists, on the development of the human brain, women and men. And as babies, or even in the womb, there are more synapses with the female mind than the male mind. And as the men are born and they get older, those synapses start to disintegrate. So that's why. No. With women, they stay strong. And that enables them to be better telephone operators or have been in the past. They can be handling multiple conversations and following different things at the same time. And they are gifted at being able to handle various requests that come up because life doesn't follow an even pattern. And for men, I'm sure there are exceptions, but men oftentimes don't have that mental flexibility. But somebody has to, because life is an array of many things happening simultaneously. And there are other aspects. Women naturally have a maternal instinct. Some people feel like they're smothered by it maybe at times. "Oh, Mom, oh, you know, I'm a big kid now." Or one woman was sitting at with her husband at a company meeting, and she, on her left was a president, and she forgot that he was this big, important CEO of the whole corporation. I say that in jest. And she took her little napkin, started dabbing his lips. "Oh, you got a crumb over there," and all. And her husband says, "Hey, that's the president of the company." And it's like, well, he needs help. You know, I'm here to help. And so there's a nurturing instinct, but it runs deep. And our world would not exist. Society would not exist without that maternal instinct. And children they can sense when a father loves them, but they are really tuned into mothers who just naturally show concern. So if a child hurts himself or herself, and begins to cry and wants to seek refuge, who is that child going to go to more times than not? Going to be to Mom, to Mother Teresa instead of Captain Von Trapp. Have you ever seen a child run to its father when Mom was around? I never have. I'm sure it's happened. Men can be very passionate, and God wants them to be, but for a mother, so often it becomes more natural. God recognizes this maternal instinct, and that He especially built into women when He inspired Isaiah to write in Isaiah 66. Isaiah 66, in verse 13, and this is eloquently expressed. Isaiah 66, in verse 13. As one whom his mother comforts, so will I comfort you, and you shall be comforted in Jerusalem. This comes on the heels of a lot of suffering in Judah, and that's prophetic for the future. And yet this is expressed is in flowery language where God is very compassionate, and He says that the highest compassion that He can express that we would understand is the compassion that a mother would have for children. And that is so deep when you read in Samuel about Hannah, who had was married but did not have children. She wanted so much to use the maternal nurturing that God had built into her to be able to have a family. It's very natural. It's a very, very wonderful thing to aspire to. One thing that the church should be on record is endorsing and supporting. And just in case we have people here that think, well, I'm not female, or I do not have children, we all have the roles of being sisters or aunts, uncles, grandparents. We all can make a difference for other people. So one of the great assets of motherhood is compassion. And if we think about it and try to walk in our wives' shoes, for example, and appreciate what they do, then we can hold them in awe, hold this nurturing in awe. I think it's valuable to recognize and to do that. And God ran that through the entire creation, even with the animal kingdom. There was a case of this passion demonstrated by film footage that took place at a zoo where a baby fell through the bars of the exhibit and landed in this strip of land that where various animals were roving, including a couple lions, and that there was great consternation in the park. They saw this baby land on the wrong side of the fence and could have been eaten up. And there was a mother orangutan that ran out, scooped the child, and started snarling at any other of the animals that would try to encroach and save that baby's life. I remember one time watching a documentary on chickens, and here this hawk was swooping down. We've raised chickens, and that is a serious danger. But this hawk was coming in, and you could see the mother, you know, scurrying off to safety with a number of her chicks, and yet one was stranded out there in the middle of the yard. And so at the risk of its own life, it turned and ran out and roused the other confused chick and scurried it to safety as well. Just as this hawk swooped down and bounced off of the hen, but didn't kill any of them. And the person that was doing the film footage said at the end, he says, after seeing that, nothing would give me a greater joy than to be called chicken. And that's usually a negative accusation to give to somebody, oh, you're just chicken. But he thought, that's to him, that denoted great bravery. And in the animal kingdom, you see that sacrificial concern. It's absolutely fascinating, but it's even stronger with human beings. Let's take a look at 1 Samuel 1 and verse 2. 1 Samuel 1 and verse 2. And having mentioned that about chickens, I'll just quote Matthew 23 and verse 37, where Christ said, O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, oh, how often I would have gathered you together, even as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings. That was the greatest way that he could exemplify the passion that he had for the people that he was living with, working and talking to at the time. In 1 Samuel chapter 2, I've mentioned Hannah, and if we can look at the incredible intensity that she had, it says in 1 Samuel 1 and verse 2, first of all, and Elkanah had two wives. The name of one was Hannah, and the other was Peninnah. And Peninnah had children, but Hannah had no children. In verse 4, and when the time came that Elkanah offered, he gave to Peninnah his wife and to all of her sons and her daughters their various portions. To Hannah he gave even more, for he loved her. But the Lord had not allowed her to give birth, and her adversary, the other woman, provoked her, wouldn't leave her alone, harassed her. And so, verse 7, as they did so every year, she went up to the house of the Lord and wept and did not eat. Elkanah, her husband, said, Hannah, why do you weep? Why do you not eat? Why is your heart grieved? He really knew the answer. Am I not better to you than 10 sons? In other words, if you had had 10 sons and a lot of value was placed in that society and how many children you had. He says, my love is unconditional for you. But Hannah rose up after they had eaten, and then Eli the priest was sitting nearby, and she was in bitterness of soul and prayed to the Lord, and she wept sore. I mean, this was her everything, her identity, her great desire. And she vowed a vow, and she said, oh, if you indeed will look upon the infliction, she called it, of her handmaid, remember me and not forget me, but will give a man-child to me, then I will dedicate him to the Lord all the days of his life. And that's exactly what happened. And after that, she gave birth multiple times to children. But it was such a passion. It was deep. It's so deep that one person said, the definition of a mother, of being a mother, is to be somebody whose heart is walking around in another person's body. In other words, you're worried for your daughter, your son, or multiple sons. It's all the time. It's a part of you. And it's deep, and it's powerful. When God planned the birth of Jesus Christ, he was very selective as to who he chose to be his parents. Mary and Joseph were poor people, and the baby was brought to the temple for the first time, and the parents offered two doves instead of animal sacrifices that were much larger. That was the sacrifice of the poorest in society, but it didn't matter. God identified the character that the two had. And they had to be extraordinary parents. And Mary was an extraordinary person. I know she's unduly venerated and by some religions, but that doesn't preclude the fact that she was a special person. And she was the perfect mother, or as perfect, close to perfection as God could find in a human being. And to gather, for her to nurture Christ, to steer him the way that God would want him to be, was an enormous responsibility. It's an incredible project that gets glossed over, that people don't really realize. What would it be like to take all of your best maternal desires and instincts and be looking out for a child? Okay, this is the Son of God. Here I have in this manger, or now in my crib, or at home, or now here he's 2 years old, running around. I want him to have playmates. I want him to have a good diet. I want this. I want that for him. But I better not make any mistakes here. This is the whole world depends on my efforts. It was a huge responsibility, but she had the instincts to do it, and successfully did it. And certainly, even in his dying moments, Jesus Christ made sure that his mother was taken care of. He was asking John to look out for her. And the parents were extraordinary. In Luke chapter 1 and verse 46, Luke chapter 1 and verse 46, I'll read the following here. And Mary said, "My soul does magnify the Lord," because she was understanding that she would be giving birth to this child. "And my spirit has rejoiced in God, my Savior, for he has regarded the low estate of his handmaiden. And for behold, from henceforth all generations shall call me blessed." That's incredible in the fact that she understood the plan. And she, for the importance of giving birth to Jesus Christ, she was had no pretense about her own infallibilities, that she was just a human being, a piece of dust, and yet she was willing to accept this responsibility. And the same was true with even Hannah. And it would take some challenge because, well, we'll read Luke 2, verse 49. When Christ was 12, he spent extra time in the synagogue asking questions of the various rabbis. And the parents were in a panic. They didn't know where Jesus was. Verse 49, and Jesus said to them, "How is it that you, why did you seek out after me? Didn't you know that I must be about my Father's business?" And they did not understand what he was talking about. Excuse me. "And he went down from them and came to Nazareth and was subject to them, but his mother kept all of these things in her heart." She understood a lot, but she understood more as time went on. And she never deviated from what God wanted her to do. And it must have been difficult. She had to have a thick skin because a lot of people were murmuring behind her back, "Oh, this child was illegitimate. And she was, you know, she's can't consider herself to be the mother of anybody significant, important." And she had to maintain a very positive attitude and vision in spite of all of this. And so she stayed the course. And she was not the Virgin Mary that people seem to think, because she had at least six other children. But there was no room for error. Various and significant people that made their mark on society have in turn talked about the value, the role that their mothers made in their lives. George Washington said, "My mother was the most beautiful woman I ever saw. All that I am, I owe to my mother." Now, he was a surveyor, he was a general, he was a president, he was a statesman, he was a father of the country. He had was a significant part of early American history. And he said that all of that I owe to my mother and her upbringing, her success, her love, her nurture. He said, I attribute all of my success to the moral, the intellectual, and the physical education that I received from her. Abraham Lincoln said something similar. He said, "All that I am or ever hope to be, I owe to my angel mother." He was not distracted with minutia when he was growing up, you know, Pokemon cards and cartoons show endless killing and violence and such. There was a different time then, and parents were investing a lot of time in their youth. Lincoln went on to say, "I remember my mother's prayers, and they have always followed me. In the dark days of the Civil War, when he didn't know if the nation could be preserved, times when, after the two battles of Bull Run, General Lee was almost at the doorstep of the White House, and it looked like they would have to retreat, the government would have to retreat out of Maryland and D.C. further north, or surrender. And when you are in dark times like that, you know, you look to God, and if you have an example of somebody that was God-fearing, a parent, father, or mother, you know, it's easy to say, okay, what did they do? You know, flashback. Okay, yes. It's helpful to have that anchor. And, you know, all of us can have it from our relationship with God. But it's sad when people can say, you know, I never had anything to fall back on. I never had an example like that. Well, you can be that example for somebody else. You can be there for somebody else. George Washington Irving said, "A mother is the truest friend we have. When heavy and sudden trials fall upon us, when adversity overtakes the place of prosperity, when friends who rejoice with us in our sunshine desert, sunshine desert us, when trouble thickens all around, still will mother cling to us and endeavor by her kind precepts and counsels to dissipate the clouds of darkness and cause peace to return to our hearts. The fate of a child is always the work of his mother." Winston Churchill said, "The greatest teacher I ever had was my mother." And perhaps Jesus Christ could say the same thing. At one social gathering, there were two men talking one time. And so it came up, one said, "Well, what do you do?" asked the full-time scientist to the house mom. And the house mom, anticipating a public put-down, said, "Well, I am nurturing two homo sapiens into the dominant value system, the Judeo-Christian tradition, in order that they may become instruments of social transformation to turn the world into an eschatological utopia, which God has envisioned from the beginning. So what do you do?" "Oh, well, I'm just a lab technician working on the cure for cancer." You know, people will put down these things. It's not valued. Family is not valued the way it once was in this world. Motherhood, fatherhood, definitely. Fatherhood's been under attack for so long. You can see it in the comic strips. We used to have a booklet that illustrated that. Blondie and Bringing Up Father, some of the TV shows of the past. And then motherhood would be under attack. Some TV shows, My Three Sons, I remember from ages ago, where, you know, life can exist without a mother. Well, that is true. I know my mom died when I was a teenager, and life had to go on. But still, there is an agenda. Satan has an agenda. He does anything to disrupt the family. And if he can do that, then he knows that human beings will not qualify to replace him on this earth. Through Christ's sacrifice, of course. But Satan hates that, and that's one reason you will never see him try to counterfeit in other churches the holy days. Not counterfeit, but to introduce them. You see, he does counterfeit. He hides the truth, counterfeits it through other denominations constantly. But the one thing he will not counterfeit is the holy days and the plan of salvation which they picture, because that pictures him being replaced. So instead of that, anything he can do to disrupt the family unit, he'll try to do. And fatherhood's been under attack for a long time. And motherhood is really the last line of defense that our society has. And if that goes, then the next generation is just going to have to fend for itself and learn all its values off of the streets. It's that dangerous. So anything that Satan can do, and so the idea of a mother that works from the home is very much put down. And I've seen it put down in the church in times past, and even in the recent church. You know, Mr. Armstrong said that my wife is half of my ministry. And the church drifted away from that concept. There's a lot of things that have been adrift back in the 70s, again in the 90s, and then on the drawing board again. You just have to keep fighting for what's right. And not that women can't have careers outside the home, but it will inevitably involve family activity. And the family is blessed by that. So I disagree with Hillary Clinton. You know, I would expect her to do more than bake cookies and have tea. But that's what she relegates it. People that hate the idea of motherhood. Well, what do you expect? I change diapers all day? Well, nobody does that. Men can do that as well as women. And men should do that and share. But I'm glad that Jesus Christ had a mother like Mary. I'm glad there are people like Ruth and Hannah and Elizabeth mentioned in the Bible, Anna, Priscilla, Timothy's mother Eunice, and grandmother Lois, that did not limit the parameters of motherhood to menial activity. Nobody, man or woman, wants to have menial activity in life. Do we put motherhood on a pedestal and keep it there? Probably we've been too busy to think about it, but boy, we'd be in a bad, bad shape if we didn't have motherhood as God had intended it to be part of our church and our families. To use another example, I'd like to cite Thomas Edison, the famous inventor. Growing up, Thomas Edison was a very dangerous kid. He was mixing experiments on the back of a caboose one time and set the train on fire. He was a child that wanted to see if his buddy at age 6 could float if he gave him a certain chemical that was good for making helium balloons. His friend swallowed a spoonful of this stuff and he passed out, almost died. He was always getting into trouble in his curiosity. In fact, he was sent home. His teacher said, "This guy is an incompetent fool. He'll never amount to anything. He can't pass math, and you'll have to teach him at home." Edison said, quote, "I did not have my mother long, but she cast an influence that has lasted all of my life. The good effects of her early training I can never lose. If it had not been for her appreciation and her faith in me at a critical time in my experience, I should never have likely become an inventor." He invented over 1,000 different things. The motion picture, the electric light, alternate electric current, and just so many, many different other inventions. So Napoleon was the one that came up with the concept, the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. In Proverbs 31 and verse 28, I'll read that. Proverbs 31 and verse 28. It says, "And her children arise up, and they call her blessed, and her husband also, and he praises her." And we have the opportunity to do that tomorrow for those of us that are with our families. In my case, it'll be a different day because my wife needs to be back in Tampa getting ready for Cincinnati. And yet, it's an opportunity. Even society recognizes the value of Mother's Day. When you consider what they have to do, being a manager, an organizer, trustworthy, a helper to their family members, an example, a mentor, a teacher, an opportunist, a taxi driver, a healer of sorts, an edifier, restrictor, restorer, reflector of Christ. You realize motherhood is not for wimps. Dr. Laura one time was explaining that in a teaching moment to her son, he said, "Can we go after you pick me up from school? Can we go over to McDonald's?" And she says, "Oh, sure." And she just remembered that he had promised her to do something and he didn't do it. Take the garbage out to the street and clean up his room and clean up the backyard, a few things like that. He forgot to do it. Or else he chose not to. So she picks him up the next day, right on time. They go over to McDonald's and they drive right by it. And he says, hey, we're supposed to go in there. And she says, "I don't think so." "No, you promised that we're going to go to McDonald's afterwards." She says, "Well, I lied." Keeps driving. "You lied? You can't lie. You're a mother." Oh, so that's the parameter. Mother supersedes all else. If you're a mother, you can't do this, can't do that, you can't lie, you have to be good all the time. Boy, the expectations that are placed upon us sometimes as mothers is a challenge. Well, it's demanding. And Satan knows the value of motherhood, and he wants to see that come to an end. He wants to see marriages continue the divorce patterns. And we've got a case where over 40% of babies born in the U.S. have no father, and an increasing number have no mother. And instead of a counterbalance on TV and so forth, we have these TV programs, CSI and other serial police stories, female crime investigators who have no time for families or cold calculating. They see plenty of violence. I've watched a few minutes of it. And nothing, they don't flinch. You know, let me see that autopsy report. Well, how did this dead body die? Well, we didn't. And there's just devoid of human feeling and compassion. And yet this is touted. You know, these people are cool under pressure. Even decades ago, Charlie's Angels was apparently the story of crime fighters, that women with black belt karate experience that sacrificed their femininity to be in male roles to be able to fight crime and other wrong elements of society. But it puts motherhood at risk of fading away, because this is not what God intended, for mothers to be karate kings that can slice people into five pieces, you know, in 3 seconds. That there's something higher that they were called to aspire to. And any study on this subject, I realize, can reveal a minefield of emotions, minefield of unresolved emotions. Many a mother has wrestled with deep-rooted guilt among human beings. There have never been any perfect parents. And sometimes I think women can be so hard on themselves. We had a GCE conference one time in Cincinnati, and the women had got together, and they had what was going to be this get-together, tea. And so there were 200 women in a room like this, all in circular tables. And instead of being a lighthearted discussion, somehow one person said, "Well, I'm glad to be here with other wives of ministers and people of like mind, and I need some support right now because one of my kids just told me he doesn't want to be a part of this way of life anymore." And she started to cry a little bit, and then somebody says, "Well, you know, I feel the same way, because, you know, I had the most idealistic attitude when I was a young mother, and we had 4 children, and they're all doing different things now. Never anything that I had dreamed would happen, and I feel terrible about that." And then the whole room was crying. Everybody was thinking, "Oh, I'm a failure. I didn't do this right." And nobody felt good in that room. Well, there's a couple conclusions I have. It's beautiful to me that the feeling, the concern is there. It's a beautiful thing that there'd be that much compassion and empathy, certainly for children, now adults. But then, you know, there should be a caution there. You can't blame yourself if you've done everything that you can. That's all you can do is all you can do. Or maybe you think, "Well, I could have done this and I could have done that 20 years ago. I did make this course correction, but I still don't feel right about it." You can start second-guessing yourself. And you can't worry about it. If we think of all the wonderful things that have been done by mothers, there are no guarantees. Doesn't say in the Proverbs, "Spank up a child in the way he shall go, or she shall go, and she will suddenly become a church member." Oh, if life were that easy. But love and compassion and the constant, being a constant example for good, that carries a long ways. And what does it say in Proverbs 22:6? And when the child is old, will not depart from it. When that child is older, like Abraham Lincoln, I still remember the prayers of my mother. I still remember us going to the feast. You know, things are not working out in society. I remember the voice that told me that what would happen in the future. I remember that my parents, my father, my mother, worshipped and had a relationship with God. And I need something to work for me. When that person's older, will not depart from it. So don't think that you've witnessed the final chapter. Don't beat up on yourselves if you're inclined to be that way, to be too critical or whatever. One of the encouraging things that I remember in the child growth and development class in Pasadena years ago was Mr. Ante had said, just expect to make 1,000 mistakes, and through it all, you know, if you care, that's going to shine through. That's going to shine through. Of course, if you can make 100 mistakes instead of 1,000, well, that's even better, but it's not going to be a perfect management. Nobody's perfect. And when Dr. Otto Lochner used to teach the class Child Growth and Development, he would make outrageous claims how a person could raise the IQ of a child even 50 points. And he was saying that at a time when most people thought that's an impossibility. And the way there were different techniques, but it was all back to motherly or parental love, maternal love that would make that difference. Children thrive on love. And wherever we can extend that, all the better. And women are all like men. They're all very different, and you can't paint everybody with the same brush. Everybody doesn't have the same personality, but they do have the same intensity of interest, all things being equal. Intensity of interest to care for the people that are important to them that live within their reach. But women take it harder than men. That's why it says in Proverbs 10, verse 1, if I can find it quickly here, it says, a wise son makes a glad father, also a glad mother, but the foolish son is the heaviness of his mother, well, maybe of his father too, but mother. Even when you read stories of Johnny Cash or other people that were Jesse James, other people that broke the law and so forth, it seems like even if dad were out of the picture, mom was there and the heaviness was born, you know, in her gut as she suffered through the life of a son or a daughter. But love does shine through. And we encourage young mothers, if at all possible, to be able to spend as much time with their children. The way the children spell love is T-I-M-E. There's a book entitled Children Won't Wait, and the author wrote the poignant words as follows. She said, quote, there will be a time when there will be no slamming of doors, no childhood squabbles, no fingerprints on the walls. That is when I want to look back on life with joy and not regret. My time is short, and my time is now. My children will not wait. Even if they wanted to wait, we all get older. Things change. Children and teenagers should not be considered an intrusion of life, but one of the purposes of life. And we can be there for them. There are different people that in psychologists that have described and categorized different levels of love. You've got, even the Bible will do that. There's eros love, sexual love, agape love, and philia love. When Christ talked to Peter, he said, do you love me? And he was saying, well, do you have agape for me? That's the highest form of Christian love. And then he asked him again because he was trying to get Peter to realize how shallow he was. Do you even have filial love for me? If so, feed my sheep. He was saying that right after he had been crucified. And so Peter was very unglued by that, but it drove the point home that Peter didn't have but only the filial love. It was kind of a fraternal thing, like, well, I like you, but as far as really loving for you, or greater has love has no man than he give his life for his friends, deeper love. No, that wasn't there. But a lot of people in the Christian community especially, but even in psychology circles, have concluded that the highest level of love that's known to man is maternal love. It's just that deep, and even society recognizes that that is different. A deeper love than just liking somebody. There was one mom one time who had 12 children, and, well, they were all teenagers or older. And the interviewer asked, which one did you love the most? Which one do you love the most? And she thought about it, and she says, the one who at the time is the sickest, or the one who at the time is the loneliest and the furthest away from home. But it would go from person to person. And again, a woman often is a person whose heart is roaming around in the body of a son or a daughter. Oh, I hope they're okay. I wonder if they have enough. I wonder how it's going. I've counseled some people, even in the ministry. They know they have a life to live of themselves, but they sometimes get worried sick. Over on my 30-year-old daughter, you know, she's in Atlanta. Her business is floundering, or this is going on, or whatever. I'm not saying don't care, don't be detached, but we have to work within reality, within our parameters. And yet we can be so idealistic that becomes almost imprisons us, that we're such a slave to it that we can never aspire, we can never feel good about ourselves, and that's unfair to ourselves. You give it your best shot, you ask God for your help, and you do the best you can with it, and you don't worry about what you can't do and worry about the fact that you're not perfect. Those of us as husbands, as men, uncles, grandfathers, whatever, can give them reassurance. Say, you're doing great. I'll help. I'll be there. Do some of the menial stuff so that frees you up to do some of the other things. It's all too easy to say, let's go out to dinner on Mother's Day and say, well, I took care of that. No, it's more than that. And whatever we give is always returned back. It comes back many times in blessing. Love has changed the face of history. In the nation of France, there have been 69 kings. Only 3 were recognized as caring for their people, for their constituents. Only 3 out of 69. It so happens that those 3 kings were the ones that were raised by their mothers. Boy, you get a much more complete personality when you have the benefit of having nurture. There are some people that have been arrested for even serious crimes, and they're just devoid of human emotion. And one of the reasons, in some cases, is because they were never shown that. We can't afford to have a society that it lacks motherly nurture. God built that, made that so strong. So it's important to honor that, to appreciate it, and to thank those that are mothers. Sometimes the busy and frazzled mother needs the tender concern of her husband. Sometimes it's important for him to say those 3 special words that can go a long way. Those words which are, let's see doubt. You thought I was going to say something else. Well, that too. It's important to have vision. Society increasingly belittles motherhood. One mother of 2 toddlers confessed candidly to a friend, saying, "Oh, you get pay raises, a paycheck, promotions, an adult conversation. At the end of the long day, all I get is another dirty diaper." I'm not better, I'm just being honest. Well, maybe, but life is not supposed to be just that. If there are other adults or even older teens or whatever in the picture, in the family, they should reassure her that she's far, far more significant than that and help her with the menial things and again, enable her to share in some of the more meaningful activity. But a lot of times people will look at the lowest common denominator of something and belittle it so that they can justify doing something totally different, maybe that's not that beneficial to them. The Washington Times had a nonpartisan poll of mothers between the ages of, not in the later years, but age 18 to 28, young mothers. 80% of them said that they'd rather make the family their first priority, as much as could be expected. One mother said, "It's hard for me to go back to my alma mater, Harvard University, to those class reunions because I worry that my classmates will think that I squandered the exceptional opportunities that I had by not getting into the corporate world right away, but raising a family." She said, "However, the family sacrifices are worth it because my relationships, without regret, are my very best investment." I think it's great if women have abilities and they can make their mark in the workplace. You know, why not? If they have gifted intelligence or abilities or worked hard or whatever it is. But you don't want to deprecate family in the process. I can remember a woman who placed on her work resume the front cover picture of June Cleaver from the 1950s serial Leave It to Beaver. And in big, bold letters, I thought it was clever, she says, "Help, I'm turning into June Cleaver. Yeah, you know, I need to be hired." So, well, I hope she got a job, but I hope that she doesn't hate family life or think that that if somebody is raising children that they have a lesser position, that they're just, you know, well, they're only a mother. Well, if we don't have any mothers, we cease to exist. Yes, family is under attack. We've got to be convinced that motherhood is worth the investment where opportunity allows for it to be. As Edison went on to say, "If it were not for my mother's belief in me," forget the meals and cleaning up a toy room when he was little or whatever, "if it wasn't for his belief in me, I should have turned out very badly." Because the message he was getting in his school was, "Thomas, you're no good. You'll never be any good. You're a failure. You're a loser." And people, maybe many of us have even heard words like that. And that's horrible. You don't want to ever label somebody that way, because then they may actually believe it, and they will only rise to the lowest level of expectation. That's terrible. And if that be the, if people believe what you tell them, you might as well say, "You're a genius. You're going to be a terrific servant of God." Rather let them walk away and have that model to follow. But Edison was criticized. He had a teacher that hated him, and he was coming up with creative things. He came up with, one day he put a cardboard on a glass of water, flipped it over, and found that the water would stick. This is a little too heavy, so I'm not going to try it here. And he walks into his mother's sewing room and says, "Hey, look at this. Why is that this way?" Some people would have said, "Confound it, you're just a foolish kid. Put that water there before you spill it over on the floor. You just have too much free time. Quit fooling around like that and learn something significant." Well, he came up with a scientific principle. His mother sat down patiently. "Well, let's talk about this." She didn't know why that was the way it was. And there was no other person like Thomas Edison. He was always harassing her. "Where does the wind come from? How high are the stars?" And at age in 1828, he was born in 1848, I think. Anyway, so in the 60s, 70s, 1870, You know, there wasn't a whole lot of information on things like that. He was the one that was going to write the books and discover the answers to these things. But she believed in him. And she says, well, I don't know, but there is an answer. It's scientific. And I think you could be the one to find out how. I believe in you. You are intelligent. You know, you flunked the math course, but and you don't know fractions well, but I'll work with you. You can know this. And he knew everything after a while. And just a brilliant individual. But it depended on him getting a good start. Tom Landry was a famous football coach for the Dallas Cowboys and very successful. He said, in some ways, I find that my job is like that of a mother with her children, because my job as a football coach is to make men do what they don't want to do in order to achieve what they want to be. So is there any reward for motherhood? I think back to that woman who told the lab technician, I am nurturing two Homo sapiens into the dominant values of the Judeo-Christian tradition in order that they might become instruments of social transformation to turn the earth into the utopia that God had envisioned from the beginning. There should be great satisfaction with internalizing the virtues of true motherhood. We need to remind ourselves where a mother's nurture and love and vision can carry a people. Life is what we make of it. Motherhood is incredibly valuable, but motherhood is under attack. It's belittled. Society bestows precious little praise for mothers. I think people commemorate Mother's Day often out of guilt on Mother's Day. It should be a year-round phenomenon. So, what can we do about it? Well, if we can be appreciative, if we can tell the mothers that are in our lives, our extended families, how much we appreciate them and what life would be without them, I think that would give them the encouragement and to say, well, we'll do something on Mother's Day and then maybe we'll do something on another day, just so that you know that you're not taken for granted, so that you're highly appreciated. Sometimes it might mean making a phone call to several states away to reach somebody that we've known, or a grandmother, somebody that's made a difference in our life, maybe somebody that was not related but adopted us, quote unquote. And I've known of people to do that, or somebody to call up, a surprise, a teacher. Remember me? What? You know, 30 years ago, such and such a school, and you were there for me, or my mom wasn't around or whatever, but you helped me or you did this certain thing at this critical time in my life. You know, that's motherhood. That's to be valued. That's to be appreciated. Now, this is more than just a day. It's very much something that God is pleased with when people will take the time to commemorate the values of motherhood. The value of this deep, lasting love. And it does make for a stronger family. It makes for a happier family. It makes for a stronger church. And even public praise for women, as we saw in Proverbs 31. There's discussion sometimes of the Proverbs 31 woman, and I've seen some male chauvinists symbolically hit people over the head with this. Well, she should be up early. She should be working hard. She should be doing that. Well, that seems to happen naturally with women. There is such a thing as the Proverbs 31 husband, and he will provide for her. He will praise her. It says, and says maybe as much about him as it does her. And again, back to verse 28, her husband also praises her publicly. And when a marriage is happy, he is often the discloser of that. And she may be smiling quietly in the background, but there's an active effort to highlight and to extol and appreciate the features of the wife or the mother. And You know, we all do better when we're appreciated and complimented. It goes a long way. And why not? What's more important than that? Well, fatherhood's equally important. That's true. It's a different role, something that we can talk about maybe on Father's Day. I don't think you can say enough about either fatherhood, motherhood, or marriage in general. And part of the diet of a congregation is to have frequent messages on things like this. You know, to be stronger, to be more unified, be happier, to be more successful. You know, one thing that I see for the congregation here is that this is a haven of happiness. Happiness collectively and happiness in our own respective family units. Turn that around, get the Spirit of God involved with that, and rehearse and to have prominent in our active memory these very, very important principles. Principles of vision within motherhood and nurture and care and love and the willingness of all of us to appreciate that where we see that and compliment it. The rewards are there. They're sky high. And there's every reason in the world to do that. So let's take advantage of the opportunities that we have. There are some of you that still have your mothers or grandmothers, unlike myself. And you can reach out to them if you haven't already, or even have more reason to do it more frequently or more enthusiastically, to call some people up or people that have held that role. Maybe there's an aunt or a friend at church or somebody that's just been very special to you. Or somebody, I remember a profound sermonette I heard one time from a person who said, I remember the Feast of Tabernacles. I remember I didn't have a parents, and I went with friends, and I remember the person, he says, I remember 6 years of age, I'm in the back of a station wagon, somebody gave me the submarine sandwich, and he says, I remember this cookie I had in this other place, and I remember somebody played ball with me over here, and he says, I thank you, I don't know who you are out there, I don't remember the people that specifically helped me in my congregation. But there were people that took an interest. They were a mother. They were a father. They took a role, an interest. And you and I can do that for other people. And people have done that for us. So let's capitalize on the time that we have. Society got it right for once. Tomorrow, having a Mother's Day, that's appropriate. Let's do what we can to enhance and value that verbally and in every way possible in our own families and help that to inspire our wives and our mothers, grandmothers to continue to make a difference for our families.